This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Are you brothers? Are you bitches? But don't forget to wear your condom.
Joy 94.9.
You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9 with Andrew the Apprentice and Avi Miller.
And I know, it's very exciting.
Yes, I didn't say Dean Beck then.
No.
And,
well done, you.
Joining us in the studio is the new president of Living Positive Victoria, Mr. Ian Muchamore, and also Vic Perry, a health promotion officer at Living Positive Victoria. Good evening, gentlemen.
Welcome.
Good evening.
Ian, you've been in the job for 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
Something like that, yes. Yeah, been busy.
Been busy. And one of your first jobs was to go off to Darwin?
Yes, yes. Yeah. But Darwin's an interesting place, isn't it?
Lucky you.
I've been there. I haven't been for 10 years. And the city's doubled and it's still a tiny city.
It's pretty good to get a job to go to Darwin, you know, 2 weeks after you've been elected to the job.
Well, I was busy in the conference rooms most of the time and doing the business for Living Positive Victoria, and I had a lot of good conversations and learnt a lot, which we'll talk about tonight.
Fantastic. And Vic, you also travelled up to Darwin for the conferences.
I did. I had a satellite meeting beforehand as part of the Trade Aware Officers Network that I'm a member of. So it was a weekend before, and then the ASHRM conference as well as the sexual health conference following it.
Yeah, so there was the two conferences there. Mm. There was the Australasian HIV AIDS conference and also the sexual health conference. Mm. So pretty busy few days.
It was.
And it got a fair bit of media down here in Victoria and across the country.
I didn't quite appreciate for a couple of days actually how much media it got. It was phenomenal.
It was.
And I think that what came out was the to most people, if you've not seen the figures, was the overall the 10% increase in a single year in the number of new HIV infections. But that the figures in Victoria were possibly relatively stable, a couple less than they were last year. But if we go back 10 years, it's still 50% higher than in Victoria. So there's a big increases, and it's not something to be complacent about.
So 1,253 new cases of HIV in 2012. That's an average of, I just worked it out, 3.4 a day, every day. And two of them are men who have sex with men.
Yes, yes. And in the new ones, you can actually tell who's been recently infected with HIV through those stats. And it's 9 out of 10 men. 10 cases are in men who have sex with men.
Right.
Yeah, there is it's interesting, though, because it depends on which state we're talking about, too, because there has been quite a large increase in the heterosexual population in certain states, like Western Australia, for instance. So we're talking about different demographics there
in
as
different
well.
States.
So
okay.
It depends on the state. And in Victoria, New South Wales, Queensland, it seems to be consistent.
It is men who have sex with men. And we should say that rather than saying gay men as well, shouldn't we?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. There's a proportion of men who don't necessarily identify as gay.
Yep.
And the reason why we need to think about things like that is that because in terms of prevention and health promotion and targeting certain demographics, we need to be aware of things like that.
Now, as we said, just over three diagnoses a day in Australia. That's a lot, isn't it, Ian?
Well, if you look at the total population now of how many we think are living with HIV in Australia, we're looking at somewhere between 30 and 35,000 people are living with HIV. Not all of those people know that they have HIV, so we have this huge pool out there, somewhere between 2 and 10,000, depending what stats you believe. But of course, we don't know what this figure is, so it's very hard to say.
Yeah, you can't measure that one.
But it's a large figure, and it's something that really is concerning us in the response to HIV, because until we can get in there and get those people tested. So yes, I mean, you might seem that that's a large figure per day already, but actually we need to get many more people tested for HIV.
Now, there's that... Sorry,
I was going to ask, you were mentioning testing. Have the rates of testing improved at all?
The evidence that I saw, and I'm not claiming that I was on top of absolutely every presentation when there were four concurrent ones going on, but I was having a look through the major reports this afternoon. The evidence that I've seen is that no, and I think this is somewhat disturbing, that that the proportion of men that are getting tested at least once a year is, if anything, going down slightly. And if you talk to Melbourne Sexual Health, they would say that actually if you're... an active guy out there with multiple partners, you should be testing ideally 3 times a year for HIV. So we're simply not meeting that standard. But what we do have, and I think was a real focus of the conference, was we have a whole suite of new interventions and methodologies for rapid testing, for point-of-care testing, for testing in different environments, and which you might talk about.
Most of those have only come online in the last 12 months, though, so they're not necessarily covered in this 2012 figures.
No. I think David Wilson from the Kirby Institute was quite clear that in the 10% increase that we've seen nationwide, little of that, if any, perhaps a tiny amount, is accounted for by increased testing. And as you say, the new things that we've seen coming along, things like Pronto has only been going for a few months.
Yeah.
People don't know about Pronto. Pronto is the rapid HIV testing service up in Fitzroy, which is run by Victorian AIDS Council and the Burnett.
And we know, and what seems promising is that figures that are coming out of sites that are currently being used, for instance, in Sydney, ACON's rapid testing centre, you know, we've got figures there of high portion of, well, relatively high portion of people who have never tested before, and that's important, and also people who are coming back to testing, so they might not be regular testers, or regular people testing, are coming back to test. So these figures may have an impact in future.
And it's going to be something that people have to get used to, the fact that they can have a rapid test.
Oh, absolutely. And I guess it's something that a lot of people have strived for to come up with these options. And we know also from research that gay men are very happy to have a rapid test, and they're very happy to go to, for instance, a community centre where they can have a rapid test done by, for instance, a peer, not just having to go to a clinic.
And I had my test done this week, and I forgot that you could get a rapid test. So I just went and did my normal test, and it's like, oh, you could have come and organised a rapid test. And I was like, oh, that's right, forgot. Well,
I think we heard somewhere between 15 and 20 new initiatives nationwide coming on board in the last 12 months or since the last Ashen, and they're all a bit different at the moment, so it's difficult to tease out what's working and what's not working, but it will probably be what works in particular environments, and we don't quite understand that yet. One of the things which impressed me was that for something to be successful, there needs to be community trust and community involvement in delivering that testing. So I think what we've got in something like Pronto is very promising because it's community-driven. We also did hear, though, from some clinical models, one up in Queensland, for example, where doctors were undertaking the test, and it wasn't rapid testing. They were taking community setting, but the doctors were there. They were taking a blood sample and they were texting the results back, or the results back if most people were negative, or if there's something indeterminate, they would phone them up and get them to come in. And that was a model that also worked in that situation. So it's not just rapid testing. I mean, you can go to your doctor and get a normal test, and you can go to a couple of doctors in inner city practices in Melbourne and get a rapid test, or you could go down to Melbourne Sexual Health, just walk in and get a rapid test.
Yep.
Or you could book an appointment there, or you could go on a Thursday night, I believe. Actually, they're open tonight. Mm. You can go and get a test there. So there's a whole suite of different ways. And I think one of the things is people need to work out what's right for them to suit their regular testing environment. And there's probably quite a lot new that's happened, and people quite haven't got on top of all the different new options yet.
That leads me, sorry.
I was just going to say, the obvious reason for this idea or a concept of rapid testing is we know a lot of people test or not test as frequent as they could, or if ever test, because of the waiting time. That's quite a big factor in, or a big barrier for a lot of people.
Because of the anxiety around that wait?
The anxiety, yeah. And we know from studies, you know, particularly with the current sites that are around, they're showing that people are very satisfied knowing that they don't have to wait that long because of that, you know, previously of 2, 3, 4 weeks of,
now,
of being nervous about it. Yeah.
Now, in the US, they've started to begin approvals for home-based testing. Is that on the horizon here in Australia?
There were certainly some clear calls from people who were speaking saying that, you know, we're not going to get anywhere near testing this anywhere up to 10,000 people until we have home testing. We have some other really quite novel interventions, you know, going into sex on premises venues and things like home testing as well. The regulatory hurdles are fairly huge, it seems. So that may come online with some advocacy and campaigning, and certainly that's what the Terence Higgins Trust in the UK have been campaigning for, and I'm not sure how far they've got there. But it's not going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I think we also, and it won't be the magic bullet either, as I was saying. So it's going to be a whole suite of different interventions. And personally, what I believe is going to drive it is a community conversation. So I think we now have a core of people who are aware of what's been happening and the new ideas about tackling the HIV epidemic and what we can do, treatment is prevention, early testing, all of these things. So, you know, those are the people, those are the type of people that are signed up to the Ending HIV campaign. And I suspect they're the sort of people that listen to Hide and Seek. What I feel that we need to do as a community now is to actually go and talk to other people who are our peers and tell them about that. Because when I go and talk to other people and I ask them, have you heard about Pronto or have you heard about the Ending HIV campaign? Often they say, I've never heard of it.
Right.
So we've got a lot more work to do. And the most effective way to do that is within the community.
Now, I was going to bring up the Ending HIV campaign because Living Positive Victoria have now partnered with the VOC and ACON to bring that campaign to Victoria. Just a quick point, and we have the Ending HIV CSAs here on Joy. Just a little note, something to consider, and maybe this is more operations for you, Vic, is that the ads on or the announcements on Joy still refer to go see a doctor rather than to
pop off to Pronto.
Pop off to Pronto or to another service, which I thought was interesting.
I think there are a number of waves to that campaign. And so I think we've just got the first wave of that campaign
being
at the moment.
Doctors,
yeah. And I think, I believe that the next phase, which will be more about testing and then followed by more about treatment, will hopefully be more nuanced as well. But I think you're right. I mean, so you can't get all of that into one CSA.
No, it's hard
it's what I'm saying. You know,
and one of the other concerns as well is, you know, we obviously, if you take the Pronto Clinic, for example, it's focused on HIV rapid testing, but it doesn't do any other STD testing.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, I think that the other thing that is really quite worrying from all of those stats, you know, and I'm afraid I was trained a little bit in stats. I was never that good at it.
But, it's one of those things you train at a school, you go, no, that's shit. And then you get into real life and you go, damn, I needed that.
The stats on the other STIs, I think, are really of concern, and they tell us something about how we should be dealing with the HIV epidemic. So the fact that we're seeing over the last 5 years, we're seeing three times as many rectal cases of gonorrhea in MSM, in men who have sex with men or gay men. That's tripled in 5 years, and that's almost that's associated with people not using condoms. So that is so people may be using other strategies, and that's partly what, you know, some of those campaigns about, which are, you know, not solely based upon condoms. But one of the consequences we're seeing is that people don't understand that they also need to get the STI testing as well. The syphilis peak that we saw a couple of years ago has gone down a tiny bit, but it's still vastly higher than it was 10 years ago.
And that relates to probably the third arm of the Ending HIV campaign, which is condom use.
Yes, yes.
And condom use was another topic at these conferences in Darwin, wasn't it?
Well, we have seen a reduction in the number of people, men who have sex with men across the board over 10 years in consistent condom use. But it's more complicated than that, and I think people really need to understand that. What we are seeing, it's quite clear, is that people are using more sophisticated strategies. So especially among positive men, many positive men do disclose their status. Something like 4 in 10, I think, disclose their status to casual partners. But that's not a reliable method if you're using that to negotiate a safer sex strategy or an HIV prevention strategy. Did you want to say something, Vic?
To say, I guess it's about, I guess, and this goes into that debate about, you know, there are people that are talking about complacency coming in and the reasons why, you know, there's this increase in infection rate. And so what's going on with condom use? And
one of the, I suppose, you know, Ian, you were saying earlier, one of the disturbing, slightly disturbing statistics is the average age of the people who are getting diagnosed as HIV positive is also dropping.
I think it challenges common perceptions. I mean, I think the average age is now, or the median age is 34 years old. Now, I know there is a perception among some people that HIV is a condition that older gay guys get. Now, some people might think 34 is old. I don't think 34 is old.
No.
And that's dropping. Dropping year on year. And, you know, because that's the median age, that means actually 50% of the guys that get HIV are under 34 years old.
And the one of the professors, the Professor John DeWitt, the director of the National Centre in HIV Research, identified that almost 40% of gay men with casual partners report having unprotected sex, particularly amongst HIV positive and also under 25 year olds.
And that's potentially because they didn't live through the 80s and they didn't live through the Grim Reaper ads and they didn't have the kind of messaging that older people in our community did. And I wonder if, you know, a lot of people talk about the fact that those Grim Reaper ads, we didn't get them in South Africa. They were banned in South Africa because they were so graphic. You know.
And there's no way that the fear campaign like that is going to work again.
Yeah. No.
I think one of the things we were seeing at the conference and we're seeing within the community sector is a much more nuanced debate, which says that we understand that for many people, HIV is a chronic condition which can be controlled, and it's not the same as it was 30 years ago. That doesn't mean we should be complacent, but we can't expect without the lived experience that some of us had, some of us older guys had, we can't expect younger guys to behave in the same way that we did. It's just not reasonable.
You're on Hot and Sick on Joy 94.9. Ian Muchmore, new president of Living Positive Victoria, and Vic from the health promotion officer there. It's a conversation that we've been having here on Hot and Sick for the last 5 years, and I'm sure it's going to be a conversation we'll be having for a lot longer to come.
Now, Ian, before we let you go, tell us about some of the upcoming events.
Yes.
Obviously, we've got World AIDS Day coming up soon.
Yes, World AIDS Day is a bonanza. I cannot tell you about all the things that are going on because I believe that events are going on over at least the Friday, Saturday and the Sunday, which falls on, which is when World AIDS Day is. I will flag for you, I think it's called Paint the City Red, which is happening around Fed Square on Saturday, the 30th of November, from I think 11 o'clock until 6 o'clock. Now, that's being led by YARE, which is Youth Empowerment Against HIV and AIDS. It's a nice example of how the sector's coming together. So it's also the VAC and Living Positive Victoria are out there. So we'll be recruiting people for to sign up for the Enough Pledge against HIV stigma. We'll be out there. And I think there'll be a whole heap of activities. And then there'll be multiple other things going on particularly on the Sunday.
Particularly here in Melbourne, because we're all getting geared up for AIDS 2014 in July.
We are so excited.
Yes,
we are.
Ian and Vic, thank you so much for joining us on Hide and Seek. We'll see you again here, no doubt, very soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. Andrew the Apprentice and RV Miller are with you. We'll be back right after this.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.